Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. LeBron did it. I'm Andrew Sharp. On the other line, we've got Ben Golliver. What's going on, man?
Well, I could tell you were excited because we were supposed to do this at 10 my time, and you're just fiending at 9:05. Can we go? Can we go? Can we go?
Can't wait.
And so we're 40 minutes early recording this because I could just tell this is probably the greatest day of your year, right?
Well, this is the greatest day of my year. This is also the last of our playoff podcasts where we were cramming like four podcasts into every week. So I feel like we've made it to the end here, the end of the marathon of the second season with the NBA. And last night could not have been any better. Like I was shocked. Even in the second quarter, I was like, this is the best game seven I've ever seen. And then it just kept going.
It was unbelievable. And so many of the things that we had talked about, I actually felt like a lot of the work that we put in over these last couple of weeks that you're mentioning kind of came to fruition all in game seven. So
it all came together.
It was really kind of a rewarding experience. Is that a weird thing to say or kind of like a self-important thing to say? But I mean, we could dig into each aspect. But first of all, just being there, unbelievable game, obviously. The atmosphere was crazy. The Oracle crowd was much more confident than I expected, especially early in the game. I really thought they were going to come in nervous, and they didn't. And so that kind of made the fourth quarter that much more, electric for the Cavs and kind of heartbreaking for the Warriors fans, because I think that they assumed they were going to win that game all the way up until Kyrie hits that shot. And then it was like, holy crap, you know?
Well, it was interesting because I think, like, even watching from home, I wanted the Cavs to win, and I'm really proud of us for not jinxing them on Friday.
Oh, that worked out beautifully. I had people congratulating us for that, by the way.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. But even deep in the fourth quarter, I kept waiting for that Golden State run where they turn a tie game into like a 9 or 10 point game in the span of 90 seconds, and it really wasn't until LeBron tried to dunk on Draymond and got fouled and went to the line. That was the first time the entire game where I was like, wow, the Cavs are going to do this.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're talking about the runs not being there. And to me, it kind of came back to the X factor we talked about in last week's podcast, Klay Thompson. I mean, Klay just could not get it going. He was the one that needed to kind of spark those things. You know, Steph was, you know, below average Steph yet again, but Klay just couldn't find it, his shot at all. And I thought, especially in the second half, there was one moment in the third quarter where it kind of seemed like maybe they're going to be able to press it and open this thing up. And Klay's just throwing up brick after brick after brick. I was surprised. I thought he was going to have a better game seven, to be honest. I'm sure he did too. I don't know if there's an explanation for it. A lot of the shots he's taken are very high degree of difficulty shots, quick release threes. But I thought, you know, his inability to get going is what kept this game tight. And it's what kind of put Cleveland in position to close it out at the end.
Well, that and Festus Ezeli and Harrison Barnes were both just awful.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Like there were a couple times during the first quarter when I thought it was going to get out of hand, and then Festus would make a mistake, Barnes would make a mistake, and the Cavs would claw their way back into it. And it was just, it was hard to watch. Because the Warriors had been so good across the board all year, and then there were major cracks last night.
Yeah, I don't actually think it was hard to watch. To be honest, I was kind of glad it played out this way. I mentioned this earlier.
What, you felt validated?
Oh, well, number one, I felt validated. But number two, it kind of goes back to LeBron's like favorite cliche about staying true to the game. Like, the Warriors did not stay true to the game at all in this playoffs. And I understand people are going to say, oh, you're crotchety, you're getting old. You know, those things may be true. I'll admit that. But when you're out here throwing behind the back passes like Steph out of bounds down the stretch, when you're Festus Ezeli fouling LeBron James on a 3-point jump shot, when you're Harrison Barnes just getting wide open look after wide open look after wide open look, and you just can't pull yourself together well enough to hit him. You know, when you're Draymond Green getting suspended in game five, right down the list of mistakes that these guys made. And it all blew up in their face in Game 7. Afterwards, Steve Kerr said he was stunned, and he said that's what happens when you mess around, and I couldn't agree more.
Did anyone ask Kerr about playing Festus in that fourth quarter?
They did. Yeah, his basic rationale was that he was just trying to kind of protect the paint, inside out defense. He didn't really think that they were going to be able to hit their three pointers. He saw LeBron was pretty cold from outside, and so his thought was, go with size, try to get the rebounding, try to get the rim defense, because I think he was expecting LeBron to just go to the rim over and over and over again because his three pointers weren't going. That was his explanation.
Because it was also, Barnes was sitting, and they didn't run with the death line. They didn't close with the death lineup because of that.
Yeah, well, that tells you how much faith he had in Harrison Barnes, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I mean, we've made a lot of jokes, like dating back to our first podcast. We've made jokes about Harrison Barnes, but he's a good guy. His game crumbled even beyond the point of what we thought he was. Like I thought he was at least better than the last week of basketball we saw from him.
I think it's really a bad sign when everyone on Twitter is simultaneously adding up your game logs and reaching the conclusion like, oh my God, like you're 3 for your last 27. Like, I don't even know what percentage that is. That's so low.
He's not a max player, but this snowballed into like a disaster.
Well, let's see what the Lakers have up their sleeves. Let's not go.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. All bets are off. The cap floor is going to be higher than everyone expected. So who knows what's possible.
Like, once DeMar's off the table, it's going to get real slim pickings. And then,
but I want to talk about LeBron, obviously. Unique angle after Game 7, LeBron James. Can we first start with, can you imagine what the world would have been like if he had hit that, if he had connected on that dunk over Draymond?
It would be up there. It might be the greatest highlight in NBA history. Like, would that?
We could maybe just stop the NBA at that point.
Yeah. No, I really wish he had made that dunk. And
like, it really gets no better. There's nowhere to go but down.
I mean, the only way it would have been better is if it was with, like, at the buzzer. Like, that was, like, the very last play, you know? But otherwise,
it was close, though.
Otherwise, it was the perfect play. Hey, and, I mean, this kind of gets overlooked, but LeBron has had problems with his free throws before. He needed to make one. Yeah. He made one, you know? Like, you know, and people are going to say, oh, he kind of embellished the contact afterwards. He stayed down for long. I mean, that's all fine and good. They needed one free throw from him. They needed that to be a two-possession game. He gave it to him. So from that standpoint, like, you know, he delivered. He came through. No question about it.
That's been the story with his shooting. It's not a strength, but it's just good enough.
Yeah, you'll take 50% in that situation over 95% on the season any day, you know, as long as you can get the one when you need it.
And his jumper was off last night, but he hit that three over Festus. He hit the foul shots when he got fouled. I mean, you got to give him credit. Like, all the people who were harassing him through the first half of his career, last night he answered every question that people had after the 2011 finals.
Well, so the thing
it was almost like a reverse of the 2011 finals.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, because he turned it on, he saved his best for last, and he kept growing and growing and growing and growing, as opposed to shrinking like he did, you know, quote-unquote shrinking like he did in that 2011 finals. You know, the thing with the jumper that you just mentioned, he was also smart enough to know that he didn't have it, right? Like, it wasn't a ton of settling. He picked and chose his spots. He didn't overshoot. And then he did hit one three-pointer from the wing late. That was a big shot,
it
too.
It was huge.
Oh, a gigantic shot. So, he managed that game and he managed that series beautifully. I'm sure you know that I loved Kyrie Irving comparing him to Beethoven. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, this is what I live for right here. But he really did. And part of the orchestrating, part of the composing is realizing, you know, do you have your jumper? You know, it hasn't been there, you know, consistently throughout his career. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. That's really, really tricky. And he did it perfectly.
Yeah, it was perfect. And I actually liked... I mean, he was like on a completely different level in Game 5 and Game 6, But game seven was just like a classic LeBron game. Like that, he's been having those games for the last 10 years where it's like a triple double. He does everything. The shooting's not quite there, but he's as dominant as anybody on the planet. And then the chase down block is a LeBron trademark. And it was perfect for him to sort of like seal his place in history by playing his game. Like it's not like he magically turned into Michael Jordan here. Like this is LeBron, and this is everything that's made him great for like the last 10 years.
No, this was 100% on his terms. I mean, first of all, he's the one who orchestrated the whole return to Cleveland. He's the one who realized that he could leverage his superstar power into Dan Gilbert spending tons and tons of money. He's the one who helped orchestrate the Kevin Love trade. He's the one who, you know, sent David Blatt back to Turkey. I mean, he's the one who got Deion Waiters
also
out of there.
Strong-armed Gilbert into paying Tristan Thompson, who was worth every penny in this series.
100%. I mean, this was all on LeBron's terms. Showing faith in Ty Lue. I mean, all of it. And then, you know, once you get into the game, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, he really was the centerpiece. And you compare it to Steph Curry. I mean, the game just got completely away from Steph Curry. The series got away completely from Steph Curry. I would say for almost the entire thing, and we can get to Curry later, but you know, he made a comment before game seven, Curry did, that he thought he had played four pretty good games during the finals out of six. And I'm looking at those games and I'm thinking, I'll give you one, you know, I'll give you game four. I don't see three more, and I definitely don't see game seven adding to that tally. So
I think game four and game six, he was great. But other than that, I don't know.
I wouldn't give him great for game six because he wasn't there late.
Yeah, some of the fouls were dumb. All right. Yeah.
And like, I mean, ultimately they lost, and part of the reason why he wasn't out there for the final couple minutes, he didn't deliver late. So, I mean, I'll definitely give him game four. I won't give him much of anything else. But again, that goes back to LeBron's basketball intelligence. I just don't ever think LeBron would be in a situation where he played a finals like Steph did, and he was sort of like delusional enough to give himself credit for playing better than he actually did. And in this case, you know, I think LeBron,
Let's be clear though. LeBron has played a finals like Steph did.
He did.
He was worse.
100%. I mean, I was there in 2011. It was terrible. He shrank and he didn't realize it. And, you know, he had to live with the, you know, repercussions of that afterwards. And he had a really ugly, you know, send off from that finals, basically telling everybody to go back to their lives. And that tells you how far.
In retrospect though, I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, that tells you how far he's come though.
Yeah, no, he has, and what I love about LeBron is that we've known and what I love about this series is that we've known for his entire career. I mean, he's objectively great. He's got all the tools, and like all the numbers, basically every credential you would want to be in one of the like in that top five ever conversation. Like, who knows where he ranks? That. His career probably has five or six more years for that to sort of be settled. But to be in that conversation, you have to do something incredible. You know, I mean, I feel like we'd never seen him pull off an upset and sort of shock the world and defy expectations. And that's one of the curses with LeBron is that like, expectations have been like Jordan level since the day he came into the league, but this was the first series where he really went out and left the entire country saying, holy shit, look at this guy, we're so lucky to be watching him.
For sure. And you have to also appeal to people's heartstrings, right? I mean, you have to win the hearts and
totally.
minds, and
you gotta capture the imaginations, man.
And the Heat didn't do that. I mean, they were the Hollywood as hell Heatles. You know, they were the big three who teamed up and found the cheat code on the salary cap to kind of beat everybody, and they ran everybody off the court because they had the most talent, and they beat a younger Thunder team. Yes, they had an unbelievable seven game win over the Spurs, but that wasn't so much about like, oh, this underdog story, gritty underdog, you know, the amazing comeback. It was more just like, we can't believe that happened. You know, I think that, you know, maybe Ray Allen's shot captured the imagination, but on the whole, that Miami era wasn't exactly, you know, appealing to.
No, because even in Miami, the expectation was for them to win and dominate.
Yeah, and like they appealed to their own fan base so much that the people left the building early, you know, during that finals, which is still hilarious. And they're, you know, trying to get back in the building. So I think that in, you know, in the 2016 finals, LeBron connected with the masses emotionally in a way that he's never done before. I think that adds to this peak moment of his career. This is by far the best moment of his career. Nothing to date has come close, and nothing afterwards will be able to match this. And I think that's why you saw his emotional response on the court. I think that's why, you know, you're going to see a lot of excitement here in the next week or so as they go through the parade and all of that. I mean, I think there's going to be a real outpouring around LeBron and a new celebration of him, and he completely deserves it. I mean, this guy's been famous for more than half of his life. He's had the expectations of, you know, delivering for Cleveland since he got drafted in 2003, and then maybe even before that, you know, when he's winning state titles as a freshman in Akron, Ohio. I mean, this guy has been on the national radar basically for 15 or 16 years out of his 31 years. He's got to be one of the most successful child stars in you know, the history of the world. And for him to actually do it, you know, it's unbelievable.
And can I tell you one other thing that I loved about these finals? And it's along the lines of what you're saying. But like, when we talk about Cleveland and how it changed the story, I mean, LeBron deserves credit for orchestrating all that. But then it also, in some ways, kind of felt cheap. Like, I mean, people who pay attention like knew that he was doing this because it was the one way that he could sort of get into the Jordan conversation without winning six rings. It's like going back to win a title for the Cavs would be a huge deal. But then he also kind of, I mean, he did that building a second super team in Cleveland. And it was like a second version of the Heat. So midway through last year, it began to feel a little bit cheap. And it felt like kind of like an exercise in brand management. But then with what I love about this is that the Warriors deserve credit for making this particular final so great, because the rise of the Warriors was truly something that he didn't count on, and truly something that like most basketball observers were like, well, LeBron's screwed. And this is not going to end well.
They were the evil empire LeBron needed, for sure.
Well, it made it so that like the tears last night were genuine. Like this was a serious, serious breakthrough for him, and he was actually a real underdog. In this wasn't like just some narrative that he had crafted. Like this all got very real, and then he came through.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my piece from last night. I kind of started it with a quote from that was on the locker room of his high
school. I did see
of his high school locker. Oh, you've read everything. You probably didn't sleep last night. What am I saying?
Nobody. I did stay up late. I stayed up late reading a bunch of stuff. And nobody in the world is happier than me that your field trip to St. Vincent St. Mary's paid off.
Well, let me just read this quote real quick. So this is in the locker room of his high school locker room. It just says discipline. Do what has to be done when it has to be done as well as it can be done. And do it that way all the time, right? And I think that was what LeBron did in this finals, but also just in general when it came to leading these Cavaliers. And if anyone's ever embodied like a motivational motto better than LeBron, I'd like to see it. Because, I mean, you just look at that block play, right? You know, somebody needs to get back on defense. Well, LeBron covers half the court in 5 seconds. You know, somebody needs to do it right then because it's a tight game. If Golden State finally gets some momentum, they get a lead. You know, that could be theirs, you know, for the taking down the stretch. And LeBron erases the shot. He does it with a combination of, you know, fluidity and power and strength and speed that nobody else on the planet has. And he's been doing that chase down block for his entire career. He's blocked, you know, Steph Curry multiple times in the series. And, you know, he's been campaigning that he should be a defensive player of the year guy for a while because he thinks he gets, you know, kind of overlooked on that end. But he was there to bail them out when they needed him.
First, one thing. LeBron does not get overlooked as a defensive player. That's like one of the first things people mention when they say we don't appreciate him enough. Like we're talking about LeBron's defense constantly.
Well, it could just be the LeBron, you know, LeBron really cares about the awards, don't you think? I mean, it could just be a situation where he doesn't have that hardware. There's like a missing spot on his mantle.
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
And it's like
he definitely pays attention to history more than probably any superstar in the NBA.
You know, Savannah's probably like, hey, I want to put a new picture of Bronny right there on that empty spot in the mantle. And LeBron's like, no, no, that's where my defensive player of the year trophy is going to go. We just haven't won it yet.
That's where my all defense trophies go.
But I just thought that, he carried them so well down 3-1, and that adds to the underdog aspect of it too, right? A lot of teams would crack in that situation. A lot of teams would mail in game 5 on the road. You know, Draymond Green suspension or not, a lot of teams don't show up there. LeBron pulled them through that with his 41. He was able to kind of connect with Kyrie well enough over the course of the season as a leader to kind of get Kyrie in a situation where he was able to deliver in game 5 too. And that's where the series turned. Everybody agreed about that. You know, Steve Kerr, Draymond Green, everybody else, they said game 5 was where the series turned. And after that, the Warriors just never looked like themselves. And you credit LeBron's sort of mental resolve, his discipline, his consistency, all of those things for getting them through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved the chase down block that you mentioned.
Let's talk about that more. That was better than the dunk almost. I mean, if the dunk had gone in, we'd have a real debate here, but that was a great,
if the
great
dunk had
block.
Gone in, the earth would have been split in half. But the chase down block was amazing in its own right. And it was great because it's a LeBron trademark. And it's just, it felt like an appropriate way to end like his signature performance. Cause it's also something that no other legend in NBA history can do that so regularly. But I mean, watching it from home was really pretty shocking. Cause like he sort of exploded out of nowhere. Like he wasn't even in the shot on ABC, for most of that play. And then, I mean, that was probably one of the that and Kyrie's three like sealed the game.
I mean, it goes back to his intelligence and his vision. I mean, he saw that thing developing multiple seconds before it happened. He was tracking it from half court. And it's just crazy. I mean, to have the, you know, the self-belief and the experience to be able to do that in that situation, to be able to execute it, no foul. And also, Iguodala and Steph, they ran a good 2-on-1 fast break. You know, Iguodala pushed the ball up ahead. Steph gave him, you know, the crisp bounce pass back. He caught it in full stride. He had the seam to the basket. He laid it up with the right hand. I mean, everything you're taught to do as a kid playing basketball, those guys did. And LeBron just swallowed the shot whole because he's LeBron.
No, it was amazing. And you know what? Another thing about those chase down blocks that I really enjoy is that so much of what makes LeBron great is, I don't want to say boring, but it's very like basic fundamental basketball stuff that he's mastered, whether it's passing. I mean, he can rebound on Draymond Green's level. He can defend anyone. And it's all very, you have to really love basketball to appreciate how incredible he is and just how flawless and like his whole game is beyond the jumper, but like he had all of that going over the past couple games. But the blocks, man, that's where you really see like the combination of his athleticism, like his speed, his power, his intelligence, basically like the three factors that make him so unfair are right there. And like anybody who's, you don't even have to have watched a basketball game to be sitting there and be like, oh my God, who's that? And that was, it was cool for him to end on that note, because this was sort of a series that made everybody like this was the series that everyone in America could sort of appreciate.
Like, I feel like if you ever take the court with LeBron James, and you watch him or you feel him make a play like that, you're going to be scared the rest of your life that he's going to just be able to block any shot from any angle. Like, I feel like it has that sort of a looming mentality because he just comes out of nowhere and he's so forceful with it. You know, I would be afraid to shoot a layup on an empty court if I was Andre Iguodala for the next 2 months, you know, because LeBron's just going to pop through the tunnel and block it. So when we look at, like, you know, this finals in terms of the enduring moments, what do you think's number one? Is it going to be that block, or is it going to be Kyrie's shot, or is it going to be LeBron's block on Steph in game 6 where we really talk to him about it, or is it going to be that dead ball block in game 3? I mean, what do you think are going to be the signature moments if you had to kind of point to one? I mean, there clearly wasn't like a Ray Allen shot.
There wasn't. And I mean, I it could be LeBron celebrating. LeBron's block is going to be in the mix. For me, from the game six, fourth quarter is my personal signature moment.
Okay.
Because it was just like LeBron just put the team on his back and was playing the best basketball I've ever seen from him. But we should talk about Kyrie because he was a huge, huge factor last night. And as early as like 2 minutes into the third quarter, I was cursing him out in my living room. And then he just like comes to life. And he turned the entire game around. It felt like Golden State was on the verge of breaking things open until Kyrie went off. And then suddenly the Cavs had control.
Well, here's another one where sort of our groundwork from previous podcasts paid off, right? I mean, we talked about the Kyrie Kobe angle. And then after the press conference, Kyrie says, the only thing I was thinking in the back of my head down the stretch was Mamba mentality. And I was like, oh, my God, you are a completely brainwashed disciple. And I love it. Yeah,
I support that. Aren't we all?
I mean, that shot, that's the kind of shot that could change Kyrie's career, not only for this year, obviously making him a champion. But
that's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of shot that takes you and gives you the confidence to say, look, like you have the potential to be the best point guard on the planet. You know, we didn't necessarily think that for Kyrie. We thought, okay, maybe top five. But if he gets serious about it here in the next couple of years, I mean, he can realize now there's nothing that he can't do. And I think he saw that he outplayed Steph on the road games five and game seven, period. You know, so
not only that, I was thinking about Steph after the Kyrie shot, because it was just like the shift in Steph from last year to this season is a real testament to what winning a title can do for a guy, because Steph came into this year knowing that nobody could stop him. After he survived Dellavedova, it was all bets are off.
It's all downhill. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, so basically, and that's what I wonder about with Kyrie. I mean, there's still, I want to go on the record saying that John Wall is still better than Kyrie Irving, but I don't know, man. It could get pretty evil over the next few years if he's going to be more confident and just generally sort of build on this. Like this performance alone was above and beyond anything I think most anyone would have expected from Kyrie.
Well, I've got a vision, Andrew. The vision is Cavaliers Nets on a Tuesday night in February, and LeBron's being rested because Ty Lue realizes he doesn't need LeBron to beat the Nets, and Kyrie puts up 73 points. You know, I think that this that's in play. I mean, I think if you're gonna bet on any player to put up like a serious point total in a game, it's got to be him, because he just gets so scorching hot when he's going. He's a crazy shot maker. On balance, is this going to be a great thing for him in terms of his efficiency, or is he going to go too far down the rabbit hole, the Kobe rabbit hole? I can see that being a problem, but for right now, nobody's complaining. I mean, what a shot over Steph. And he kind of suckered Steph into trying to come back the other end and go shot for shot, and that worked perfectly because Steph was off. He didn't have the level of restraint that LeBron was showing with his jumper in game seven, knowing it wasn't there.
Nor should he, really.
Yeah, I guess. But was that the best shot? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think, what do you mean? Are you talking about with the shot with 35 seconds left or whatever it was?
Well, I'm just saying like on the next possession, he comes down, he just pounds the ball. They don't run any offense. And, he misses another jumper off the dribble. Like he'd been missing jumpers off the dribble all game and all series long. I don't know if that was the best decision for Steph to try to get caught up in the head-to-head. I mean, I don't know. I would have looked for something else.
I think in the final minute, I mean, nobody in the NBA really runs offense, especially I can't blame anyone for not running a set in the final minute of a game seven.
I don't need 15 Harlem Globetrotter passes between the legs and zippers and elevators and all this. I'm just saying, don't just pound the ball and take a tough off the dribble three if you can help it. But that was really what they were reduced to. I mean, it was a microcosm of their offense these last three games where, it was just everything was three-pointers. They weren't really getting to the free throw line. They weren't getting a lot of drive and kick stuff. They weren't getting anything at the basket. It was just, jumper, 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 jumper. And it kept them in it. I mean, they had a huge, three-point differential margin in game seven. It looked like that was going to save the day. But they fell apart down the stretch, missed their last nine shots. And, you know, Steph's right in the middle of that. And I'm holding him responsible. I'm sorry. I'm not going to let Steph off the hook. I'm just not going to do it.
My favorite development of this playoffs has been you holding you're just so disappointed in the Warriors.
Well, aren't, I mean, look, here's the thing. You know, Steve Kerr said after the game, they were the better team. Cavs deserved to win, right? And I was thinking in the back of my head, I wonder if he also feels like his team deserved to lose. The way that they conducted themselves while being up, you know, after being up 3-1, you know, the taking the shots at LeBron during the press conference, was that necessary? Didn't that smack a little bit of Russell Westbrook, you know, mocking and laughing at Steph Curry's defense when they were up in that series? You know, did they get ahead of themselves? Did they revert to bad tendencies? Did they let up on defense? Did they come out ready to go in game five? Were they ready to go multiple times on the road, whether it was game three or game six, getting into huge holes in Cleveland? And then, I mean, to me, the one that just jumps out and is just completely unforgivable is that behind the back pass from Steph, you know, down the stretch. What?
That was bad.
What is he doing? What is that? Can you have any explanation for that? Please tell me. It blew my mind.
No, I just love how you're out for justice. You're not going to let the Warriors slide. No, I totally feel you. That I was baffled by the behind the back pass from Steph. However, I look at this series coming into it. By the way, I want some credit for not being completely unbearable about picking the Cavs before the series started. But the reason I picked the Cavs is because I felt like something weird could happen and it could just turn into something bigger than basketball. And like, there are a bunch of different factors. Like, the stars were aligning here. I mean, you had Skip Bayless. We talked about this on Friday. This is his last day at ESPN, and he has to swallow this pill from LeBron. You had Carolina. Okay, the North Carolina lost the title game. The Carolina Panthers lost the Super Bowl. Steph Curry was probably going to take an L. I don't know, man. It was just like there were bad vibes in the universe. And most importantly, I can't hold the Warriors responsible for three of their rotation players just completely falling apart.
Yeah, but that does happen, right? I mean, that was part of it.
No, it does happen, but it's not. But I don't think it's a function of them being like sloppy. And I also think that I still don't think Steph was healthy.
Okay, so here's my thing about the guys falling apart, and even the injury to Bogut, right? I just believe that the Warriors had a certain feeling of exceptionalism that goes back to those light years ahead comment from the owner. It goes back to Steph still dancing and celebrating when he finally hits a 3-pointer in game seven, even though the game's far from over. It goes back to Draymond not being able to control his emotions in game five. I mean, these guys, to a certain degree, thought they played by different rules. You know, they thought they were untouchable. And when you win 73 games and when you win the title last year as easily as they did, I can understand that kind of creeping into their head.
When Steph was healthy, they were untouchable.
I understand that. And if we were going to blame it all on Steph's health, I think that would actually...
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's shortchanging LeBron. I think it's too simplistic. Yeah. But the problem is they needed to mentally adjust, right? They needed to realize, look, we're not untouchable. I thought the Thunder series scared them enough. It just didn't. I mean, they came out, they got up 2-0, and they got complacent again, and they reverted to some really, really bad habits. And then all of a sudden, the pressure mounts, and these role players start dropping one by one by one, and you need to turn to your stars to carry you through in that moment. Steph did not deliver in game five down the stretch when they needed him to. He did not pull the team together emotionally after Bogut goes out injured. He's not good enough defensively and as an all-around player to sort of control the action in the way that LeBron did. And ultimately, he turned into a one-dimensional jump shooter who couldn't hit his jump shots at a high enough rate to carry his team through these last couple games. And
absolutely,
I mean, that's kind of what happened. And so the exceptionalism is gone. That's why he's in the podium room with his head bowed, you know, as he's listening to Draymond Green talk, you know, looking like he can't believe what's happened. That's why he's pledging that they'll be back. I mean, this isn't the last that we've seen of them. I think they're going to take a lot of motivation from this. I think they're going to have a lot of lessons learned from this. And I think, you know, the biggest one is don't take anything for granted. And I really do believe at multiple times during this postseason stretch, they took stuff for granted that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just feel like this was kind of the perfect storm of strange factors in the universe, plus LeBron turning, LeBron getting legendary, and the Warriors were vulnerable in ways that weren't totally their fault. But I definitely hear their stuff with their attitude and everything else that, like, that makes sense to me. But I just can't put this completely on them as like a choke job.
Well, I maybe not choke job. That sounds a little bit strong, but they certainly contributed to their own demise. And also, I think we should give a real shout out to Finals MVP runner up Kiki Vandeweghe, because that decision took a lot of guts. I mean, it kind of didn't.
I was gonna mention. I mean, they will almost definitely win Game 5 if Draymond isn't suspended.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Coupled with that, I think you have to make the case. You have to wonder, certainly, if it's 2-2, do they still suspend Draymond?
Oh man, I don't know. Maybe we're gonna get like a tell-all from Kiki about that decision, because you got to imagine there was layers to that, right?
I mean, I will read any tell-all from Kiki.
Because, like, didn't his wife tweet something about how she didn't agree with the decision at one point? And you know they had to be going back and forth about, you know, can we appease LeBron and the Cavaliers?
It was an incredibly borderline decision to suspend Draymond for that. But, I mean, it is what it is. Like, Draymond had it coming, I guess, was sort of the internet consensus. But, like, the stuff with LeBron, that wasn't a fight. I think a lot of it's strange to me that everyone just sort of conceded, like, okay, yeah, this is normal. I guess it's just a sort of residual Draymond hate from the Steven Adams stuff.
Yeah. Hey, so here's a question for you, related to Draymond. You know, he made a comment last night. He blamed himself for everything. You know, he said he's not afraid to take the blame. The series turned in Game 5, but he also said that he doesn't see their entire season as a failure, that they just basically failed at the one of the goals that they had, right?
Yeah.
Now that we're actually here in the situation we've talked about for months, where they won 73 games, but they don't have the title to validate it, I mean, do you see this season as a failure or not?
Well, I know that Fire and Brimstone Golliver is going to say it was a failure. I don't know. I think Clay, in one of the press conferences we were in together, Clay said it would be a failure no matter what if they didn't win a title.
Yeah, championship or bust.
Yeah, championship or bust. And I think they're in that mode where that's the way they have to think. But there are certainly worse ways to lose a title. And I think that they've established a core, and everyone in the nucleus, whether it's Draymond, Clay, Steph, they all took a step forward this year. And so there's a lot to build on from that. So I wouldn't be too freaked out if I were a Warriors fan.
I mean, there's definitely positives you could take for this season, obviously 73 wins, but I mean, I think it has to go down as a failure. It does. I mean, they're up 3-1 in total control.
You're right.
And they're always going to have this on them. This is the kind of loss I really think is, you know, it's going to haunt them for decades. We always hear these stories about guys like Jerry West, you know, well removed from their playing career, decades removed, and they're still haunted by this game or that game. I think this series will stick with Steph, Clay, Draymond, Steve Kerr, the Warriors front office, for the rest of their lives. I mean, I think it was that type of a loss. Not necessarily just Game 7, but just the way that it unfolded with the collapse, and just how much was on the line and how close they were to delivering it. And also how much went into even just getting to the finals, being able to pull yourself back against the Thunder. And the emotional roller coaster there was just crazy. To be one win short after all that went into that season, how many things went perfectly in that season. I mean, that is a really tough loss. Yeah.
It's like the 2000, Tom Thibodeau has said this, that the 2010 finals haunts the Celtics coaches more than they ever enjoy the 2008 win. And that'll definitely be true. I mean,
oh yeah.
It's like to the nth degree with the 73 wins, and they were right there for three games, and mm-hmm. they just couldn't pull it together. So it's, I don't blame them for, I don't, especially the coaching staff, I don't blame them for sort of living with this, and it's going to be a long summer. One thing though, we on Friday we talked about how Draymond would take years for him to live down the suspension. I don't know. I like
three days. Took him 3 days to live it down.
But like he came through more than anyone last night, and you got to give him credit for that.
He had an unbelievable game when his 3-point shot's on.
Yeah,
he's like
it almost felt like a fluke because like he was getting wide open threes and he was actually nailing them.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when his 3-point shot's on, he's a lot more fun to watch than Steph or really anyone else on their team because of all the other things that he's constantly doing. And it's sort of like the threes are the reward. It's like, hey, if you play defense perfectly, possession after possession, and you're getting deflections and blocks and steals and you're protecting the rim, here's your reward. You get to go hit some 3-pointers. And he had one game against the Blazers. I think he had 8 threes in that game. It was just a crazy performance. And it kind of felt like that one all over again.
Yeah,
you know, in the finals. But that just says how much his teammates crumbled around him, because normally if you're getting that kind of a game from Draymond, that's an automatic W, right?
Yeah. No, and side note to that game, to just his numbers, there was like midway through the third quarter, I looked at the stats, and both LeBron and Draymond were leading in every single category: points, rebounds, assists, and then they have like a defense category. And I thought to myself, like, this is why Ben Simmons is going number one, because if he can learn to shoot a jumper, like that type of player who can dominate from the four and just sort of do everything for an offense is going to be the most valuable sort of prototype in the NBA.
Totally. I mean, and I keep going back to it with Simmons, is that the ability to collapse a defense, get to the rim, and make smart decisions, those kinds of guys don't come around very often. Even if he's LeBron light, you know, even if he's giving you like 60% of LeBron in that category, you're going to take it, and you can build a really, really good offense around him.
Assuming he can hit a jumper.
Yeah, and I don't even know necessarily whether that's going to matter that much. I mean, I think it, or at least not as much as people are making it out to be. I think that if you can get to the basket as well as he showed during high school and college, the jumper stuff, I mean, play him off as far as you want. If this guy can get a full head of steam going to the hoop, he's going to be a problem for a defense either way. And obviously, you know, the jumper is going to be a work in progress, probably a multi-year thing. But I'm just not as worried about Ben Simmons as a lot of people are.
Yeah, no, I have questions with Simmons, but the argument for taking him number one is clear, and it was right there in game seven. So what else stuck out for you as we look back?
Well, you know how Pat Riley famously copyrighted the phrase, what was it, three-peat? Or yeah. So I want to copyright the phrase three match, because I want a three match next year. I think we need.
I cannot believe you waited 40 minutes into the pod to drop that on us.
Look, I give it to the real heads who stick around and listen. You know, actually, can I go on a rant? One of my worst pet peeves right now is people who listen to podcasts, but then so they'll tell you that they listen to the podcast, like trying to butter you up, right? And then some conversation will come up, and then it'll be clear that they didn't listen to the whole podcast. It's just like leaving sporting events early. That's one of my pet peeves. You got to listen to a podcast all the way through, every single second.
All the way through, okay.
Because you never know when we might be dropping gems 44 minutes into this thing, you know?
That's true. That's actually why we save these. Speaking of which, can we get a little recap of your nightly news appearance, NBC Nightly News?
Oh, God. Well, that was... Yeah,
I was legitimately upset that you didn't share it on the podcast last week.
Well, that just kind of came out of nowhere. Like while we were doing the last podcast, they're like, "Hey, we're scrambling. We just found out there's a game seven. You know, we're the national news newscast. We didn't know that the NBA finals were going on." No, they did like a 15-minute interview, and then they ended up using like 6 seconds of it, where basically I just said the words LeBron James, Steph Curry finals, and then that was
Yeah.
the cut that they used. But hey, that's cool, whatever.
Look, man, you got the NBC News graphic. You got the screenshot. That's all that
Yeah,
matters.
no,
Young Tom Brokaw.
I do it for the Twitter. Yeah, so anyway, back to what I was saying, three match. We want Cavs. We
Rematch.
want Cavs.
Rematch.
Cavs Warriors 2017, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I let me go ahead and pick the Warriors for that series right now.
In five.
Yeah. This was an awesome Cavs season. Question for the Cavs though. Do you think they trade Kevin Love after this finals?
I was, you know me, I was completely locked into that idea. But I
Yeah.
think when you win the title, you have to run it back. That's just kind of how it goes, right? And I think he probably saved his job by being, barely adequate last night. No, he was good. He had a good first quarter, and then he just kind of got quiet. And it was one of those things where like a good first impression can really carry you.
Yeah.
But he worked hard down the stretch defensively, and that's sort of what they somewhat needed from him. And I think that these guys are only going to get more comfortable with each other. And now they don't really have to stress over the minor stuff during the regular season because they won the title, right? I mean, next year, I think the big concern if you're the Cavaliers is just these guys, turn in like a 45 win season because nothing matters because they know they can just do it in the playoffs.
I thought about that last night too. It's like if we thought the Cavs were mailing it in this season, like it's gonna get real aggressive next season.
Yeah.
Hey, Kyrie's gonna take a vacation this time. It's gonna be great. We'll have Mo Williams running point for a month.
Yeah, you know how people got mad at LeBron for taking the 2 weeks off last year to kind of rehab his back or whatever? I mean, what are they going to say when he takes a 3 month sabbatical in the middle of the season, comes back in March?
Yeah, it'll be great. So, the flip side of that, what do you do if you're Golden State?
I think you just need to not get too locked into the idea that this squad, which was so amazing last year, has to be maintained at all costs, right? I think you need to have a
No,
certain le
definitely
you
not.
need to have a certain level of flexibility. Chase Durant, go for it, whatever. But I also think, make a smart decision with Barnes. If you can't talk him down to a reasonable number, don't just pay him to pay him. Like, just be willing to try to find somebody who can give you 80% of what he does for 20% of the price. And just be willing to move forward. And then with Azeli, I think you have a decision between him and Bogut where can you pay both of them, And so does Bogut become a trade chip because of the injury, or because you decide that Azeli is the future? I'm not
I
sure.
don't think Azeli is the future. I feel like we just found out that he's not, and it was weird to me talking to some Warriors people at the finals, and they were like, "Yeah, like I think they'll bring Azeli back." I mean, like, didn't Steve Kerr just spend the last 4 months freezing this dude out, and then the only time we saw him was when he showed up, and like, I mean, he wasn't Barnes level in Game 7, but he wasn't great.
He was really rough game. I mean, that foul, he's lucky Steph threw that behind the back pass out of bounds because that foul on LeBron would have otherwise been like the sort of the defining moment of Golden State's like late game screw ups.
He would have been number one on your hit list.
Oh yeah, but thankfully Steph came through as he always does, so reliable.
Steph did come through.
But no, by the way, I really hope LeBron plays in the Olympics. That would be great.
Me too. Me too. And but by the way, there was also that like initial there was the initial panic about nobody wanted to play in the Olympics. But now, I mean, they've got Paul George, they've got Kevin Durant. It looks like they may have Dame Lillard. Like they'll be a solid group down there.
Yeah, I mean, as long as if Durant's in, then you've got some real juice. That's good.
And I'm going instead of Game 7, I'm going to the Olympics, and I'll get Zika and some time with Dame Lillard, hopefully.
Well, then I really hope LeBron goes because that would be the ultimate victory lap for LeBron. It's just like rolling through Rio, punking these
It'd be
like
great.
teams like Colombia or whoever they're gonna play. Yeah, that'd be great.
So one other thought on the Warriors. There are people who have said that this loss helps their chances with Durant, and
No.
I kind of understand that, but I still don't think it will really make sense for Durant from like a from a basketball standpoint, sharing everything with Steph and Clay, from a marketing standpoint with the Under Armour Nike awkwardness, just from an image standpoint, given the 73 wins and the Western Conference Finals, like, it's still really crazy, regardless of whether they won or lost the finals. But a backup plan I thought of is Nick Batum.
Yeah, he's going to get max money too. So they're going to be in a tough situation where it's going to, I mean, and that is the one thing that could keep Barnes in town, is that they can pay max money to keep Barnes, but they're going to have a hard time crafting a gigantic max slot to get somebody else's free agent. I mean, possibly okay. They can do it with some maneuvering. I haven't looked at their books that carefully.
They would probably have to, they'd probably have to clear some people out.
Yeah. So then is it worth it?
Isn't necessarily worth that. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the same things people say about Barnes apply to Batum too. I mean, people in Portland feel exactly like towards Batum the same way that Golden State fans do towards Barnes. And I think one other thing real quick on the KD to the Warriors thing, I think it comes down as simple as this. I don't think Kevin Durant wants to play with Steph Curry. You know, I don't think that those guys have much of a bond. There seemed to be some real animosity between them during the Western Conference Finals. You know, competitiveness on the court, obviously, but then also just the press conference where Durant's kind of slighting him a little bit on his defense, and then also he was kind of mocking Steph for jumping into the crowd that one time where he got the elbow injury. I just don't see those guys coexisting or Durant wanting to be in a position where he's going to go join Steph's team. I just don't see it. I know it's as simple as an ego breakdown, but I think that's the kind of thing where that's a huge factor, and I can't get over it.
I know, it's definitely a factor, and it's interesting because I think there was a time when Steph was kind of closer with Durant, or at least they weren't like enemies. But Steph, for whatever reason, made a lot of enemies with the rest of the superstars in the NBA this year. He does not seem like a very popular guy right now.
Yeah, well, he was way over the top in some of his celebrations on the court. He's worse than Westbrook. I mean, like,
well, I also feel like they resent how popular he got.
And
how quickly he crossed over to the mainstream, while someone like Durant has been incredible for the last like 5 or 6 years, but it still has not really is not like a household name among Steph was in the LeBron, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning category like almost immediately.
Yeah, and then there's definitely some jealousy and envy involved in that, no question about it. I mean, it goes back to like that thing, the stat that I was quoting, where like if the Warriors had won this finals, Steph would have 2 and 2 tries, LeBron would have 2 and 7 tries, and LeBron played like 8,000 playoff minutes to get 2 titles. Steph had played like 2,000 playoff minutes to get 2 titles. I mean, that kind of stuff. Yeah, you don't necessarily feel like they've worked as hard as you've worked, you know, whether or not that's a rational opinion or not. So I agree. I just don't see Durant to the Warriors being a thing, and. You know, if you're Golden State, as deep as they are, as talented as their roster is, how many true trade chips do they have, though? I think that's kind of a question because they got to keep Iguodala. It's like their core pieces are all like completely indispensable. Iguodala, Green, Thompson, Curry. I mean, those guys are just locked in. So past those guys, who are you going to trade to get upgrades? I'm not sure.
100%. I'm just glad. I mean, this is exciting. We're now talking about crazy free agent theories. We're talking about petty resentments between superstars. This is the other side of the NBA that we've left behind for the last 3 months in playoff mode. But now we've got the draft coming up. Everything is about to get stupid again, and it's gonna be great.
Okay, my one last thing on the Warriors. Joe Lacob.
Lay it on me.
Joe Lacob. Did he cost them the season? Did he cost them
so
the title?
So Joe Lacob, everything you've said about like defying the basketball gods and being obnoxious and
not
like,
being true to the game, to the game.
Exactly. Joe Lacob is the only one who deserves all of that criticism.
Okay. I'm fine with that. I'll give Steph a pass. Take it all back. Sorry, Steph. Take it all back.
I forgot about the Lacob interview when I was talking about all the weird stars that aligned for the Cavs in this series. The Lacob interview was huge. And I still think that I don't seriously believe that had a fact that played a role in Steph's injury. against Houston, but I don't know, man. It was a lot of things sort of broke bad pretty quickly for these guys.
That was one gigantic helping of karma. I mean, that came back to him quick. A good lesson for them too, though, and it just goes back to the untouchability and the invincibility thing. You know, sometimes it's good to be humbled, and sometimes, you know, frankly, we see teams best. We see the best that teams have to offer after they've been humbled, right? After they've been cut down. And the one guy who really kind of symbolized that to me was Draymond Green. And this guy looks like he's ready to start next season tomorrow. You know, he,
I don't like, blame him.
His press conference, like, he's like, I've learned everything. I take all the blame. I can't wait to get back out there. And it's not like Draymond needed more motivation, right?
It sounds like Draymond is going to play in the Olympics, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's another factor that could make LeBron and Rio even more fun. Those two together. Reunion.
Well, so Draymond in the Olympics is going to be just like Barkley in the Olympics, where, you know, he's throwing elbows and, like, against, you know, they're playing countries that have just been introduced to the sport. You know, they don't even really know what they're doing. And Barkley's throwing elbows and being public enemy number one in the 92 Olympics. That's going to be Draymond in 2016. You know, he's going to be... You know, they better keep some flagrant foul points. I hope FIBA keeps track of flagrant foul points. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, all right. Well, last question. Are you in Los Angeles right now? I forgot to ask you when we first got on the phone.
No, I'm still here in Oakland. I'm going to get like a 16-hour sojourn down to LA, and then it's going to be on to New York for the draft.
Wow.
It's perfect.
quite a run you're on. But hey, in New York, you could do nightly news in person.
Yeah, Lester Holt and I are probably going to have dinner top of the Empire State Building. Is there a restaurant up there? I don't even know.
It's going to be great. Set your DVRs, people. All right. Well, hey, I will talk to you soon. Congrats on us making it through here. And congrats to LeBron and the Cavs. That was legitimately one of the cooler things I've ever seen in the NBA playoffs.
That was the best title I've seen in person. It was the coolest story. You know, the LeBron arc is definitely the coolest story I've kind of covered during my career.
It's like unbelievable. It won't really feel real for another few days. I mean, I don't know.
It won't. How are you going to celebrate?
I'm probably going to celebrate by watching Game of Thrones tonight.
So what a nerd. What a
super,
nerd.
Super crazy celebration for me. Just like I'm basically J.R. Smith in Vegas right now.
That's unbelievable. All right.
But I will talk to you soon. All right, man.
All right. Sounds good.
Peace.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.